Hello, and welcome to another episode of Mike M's Weekly Reads. I have about half hour or so before Barb gets home from work. I got home early on a Friday at 5:30, so I have some time because I've put in so many freaking other hours that I sometimes leave early on Friday, well, on time on Friday. I thought I'd record a Mike M's Weekly Reads. And I'm also going to record a retrocast this weekend. It'll just be me and Chris because Rob is off doing Easter things, and then I think after that he's got some other stuff going on. So it might just be me and Chris holding the fort for a couple weeks. It was supposed to be Geek Brunch, but Bill's off doing something, so I like try to juggle the schedule. I also just wanted to say I had a hell of a lot of fun recording with my brothers again on the Valiant podcast. I hadn't talked to them for a while, so it was just a lot of fucking fun. And it was the final episode of the Valiant podcast. I think we went a little over 50 episodes. I wasn't on all of them. There was a lot of interviews. I don't like interviews. I've never liked interviews. The only interview I ever liked is when we talked to Tom Beland, and that was because it wasn't an interview. I like talking to creators, but it better as hell not be an interview. It's me just chatting with them, just like they're another co-host on the podcast. It's a very different feel. That's why I like talking to like Robert Atkins and a couple other people that were on DC Noise because it wasn't never an interview. It was more like they were on and they were drawing and doing stuff while they were on the podcast, and we weren't really asking, like, what is your project? What is it doing? What are you going to do? I don't know. I've never been a fan of that. Some people like to get to know what's going to happen in the. I think the only interview that I've really enjoyed that actually made me fall in love with the creator was, I think it was, man, I can't remember if it was 11 O'Clock Comics or if it was what Comic Geek Speak. It was one of the two way back in the day when they were, it wasn't 11 O'Clock, it was what was that podcast before 11 O'Clock? Bullpen Bulletins became 11 O'Clock, but then they also merged with another podcast. And I can't remember what it was. But anyway, they had an interview with Rick Remender, and they were talking about religion and Strange Girl. And that sucked me in because those of you that know me know that I love when they mix like religious history and stuff. And this is about the rapture, Strange Girl. And I think ever since like Strange Girl came out, I got Sea of Red, I got everything in that he did, Fear Agent. And for the most part, I think I'd be surprised if I don't have all of his works. I'd be really surprised if I don't. So I really enjoy his Marvel work. Anything he's pretty much done, I've enjoyed. But I don't really like interviews. I don't even know where I was going with that. But anyway, we had a great time. It was about 2.5 hour podcast. It was the final finale of the Valiant podcast. I'm glad that we got together. We really did it because Rob Krieger, my co-host on Retro, said you guys really should talk about the state of Valiant because they're kind of in turmoil. They're in a transition, and whether they succeed or not, we really don't know. It seems like the people that own the company now have other motivations than comic books. And maybe the comic books are going to be pushed to the side. We don't know that for sure, but it sure looks like that is from an outsider's perspective. But not you don't we don't see it yet. Like from a publishing standpoint, they're publishing all kinds of good books right now. They're doing really good, and one of them I'm going to talk about because Ronnie asked me to talk about it. Ronnie Barron from the Nerdy Legion podcast. He does many, many of them. And We didn't really get into the books on Valiant. We just talked about the acquisition of the company. We kind of talked about the state of the books. For me, I'm not caught up on all the books, but I will say this. I have read every single Valiant comic book ever, and I can't say that for Marvel. I can't say that for DC. I can't even say that for Ultraverse because I had to fill in a lot of the run. I was missing like 60 to 80 issues. I can't say that for CrossGen because I still think I need like 4 or 5 issues towards the end when they were falling apart. But it's the only universe I've totally vested in, like all the history, everything. I'm not caught up on everything, but I'm almost caught up with everything. Let's just say I need to read about 10 issues of XO. I need to read Rapture. I have some faiths that I'm behind on. But other than that, I think I'm caught up. Oh, Quantum and Woody, and I already started catching up on that. Sorry, I have to go outside because Harley's full of grass and I have to take off the grass. But, they're really doing a damn good job on all their books. Like their art is on average way above any other company consistently. And their stories are really good. I mean, nobody reads them because they're either afraid of continuity or they just can't get into this new shared universe. And for the most part, it really isn't shared. I think that's turning people off now. You could pretty much read XO and not anything else. You could pretty much read Shadow Man and not anything else. Even though there's links to like Punk Mambo, she was recently in the Armstrong one shot, which was phenomenal, again with religious connotations. They had Noah's Ark in there. And Noah comes off his boat crazy, batshit crazy, you know. They killed the last unicorn. They're trying to bring in the animals. He was trying to mate with a lot of women, and he runs across Armstrong as the first. And he's like, "How the fuck are all these people? You know, how did he live? You know, how did he live through this great flood?" But amazing story, and it had continuity in it. It had Ivar, his brother. It had Galad. Even though he was an image and spirit more than physically there, it had the 1%. It had the sect that was coming. They wanted to invade his vault because his vault had wines from every year that he's been freaking alive. Can you imagine that? And they were kind of like celebrating. Quantum Woody came down. Archer and Faith were there. So there's some continuity, but that was just a one shot. And but for the most part, a lot of the books like Eternity, Divinity, you can read without having such a the Divinity Volume 1, there was Unity in it. But other than that, there's crossovers with Divinity 3, which had, okay, here's Archer and Armstrong, here's Shadow Man, there's the 4001 crossovers that are. But they're like tied, they're events within an event book. They're not like crossing over other books. I for the life of me can't figure out why they don't have success. And the only thing I can think of is their success. They have a faithful set of people, and that faithful set of people is always like 5 to 10,000 people. That's what it is. And I think in the 90s, it was different because of Wizard Magazine. I think people were in such a craze, instead of investing in the stock market, they were like, let's invest in comics. And Valiant was a great place to go because they heard a lot of hubbub about the stories and such. And the market was crazy at that time. People were trying different things. The 90s were a great time. People were, I don't. A lot of people shit on it, but man, there are some gems that things that came out of the 90s, and I get pissed off when people say the 90s suck. They don't know shit. I'll just flat out say that right now. They don't know how to read comics. That's my opinion. Because there's so much good things in the 90s, man. And I like change. Like, things change from a writer-driven medium to an artist-driven medium. And now they're more in a. I would say up to now they were more in a writer's mode, but I think they're in a mode right now, like if you're talking about within the last 2 years, where it has to be equally divided. There has to be good art, good story. For me, the writing is always going to overrule the art, personally, and I've said that many times. I got caught up on Ninjak. Really fascinating because it's like a detective story. He's trying to find out why he lost one of his mentors or a few, one of the older ninjas. Ninja D finds out that Ninja C is the one that killed him, and then finds out there was a group amongst the MIs, what are they called, MI6 or whatever, that was raising kids to be these agents. And they weren't good people. And then he meets an agent, another ninjak. Really good stories. A really good backminer. Ariel Oliveri drew a World War One. Oh, and you got World War One. Oh, crap. And the biplanes and shit like that. And it just looks amazing. It was a backstory. Matter of fact, when I read I think it was Ninjak number two. I was like, I wonder if this is preview for next issue. I wasn't sure if it was switching, because sometimes Valiant would put like, "Here's what's going to happen next issue," and I'd skip those because I'm like, I buy everything anyway, so I skipped it. And like, that wasn't next issue when I got to number three, Ninja K, and went back and read them, and I was like, wow, these are great. Bloodshot, still one of my favorites. I don't know what it is. I think Jeff Lemire is just hitting notes of pop culture, hitting notes of horror, hitting notes of just writing that really clicks with me. Like the fact that Magic's father was a cultist and was trying to get a hold of his daughter, and Magic tells Bloodshot, this he's fucked up. Stay away from my father. I don't want him to meet the daughter. I don't want him to anything. And he like learns that she was abused, and Bloodshot's like, fuck this noise, man. I'm gonna go beat the shit out of this motherfucker. And somebody else turns off his nanites, and things turn around, and it gets crazy. And it leads to his daughter being sick. And Rampage is involved. So many freaking good things happening in that book. And there's one silent issue. Well, it's not a silent issue. It's just a word. They did an experiment. We've had silent issues where you just see action. G.I. Joe is one of the most famous with that Snake Eyes one. And there's been several after that. Some of them will be silent issues and then have an opening page with text, like just a few thought bubbles or word bubbles, and then they end with some word bubbles. So, but the majority of the book is pictures, and it tells an action scene or some story. Well, they did, Lemire did an experiment, and it didn't work for a lot of people. A lot of people were like, well, I paid $3.99, where's the art? But they don't get it. In my opinion, they don't get the horror aspect of this. If you read this and you just imagine every scene in your mind, like you put your mind in Bloodshot's where he's in the dead side, and shit, I love the dead side, and I'll talk about the Shadow Man in a bit. But I don't like Matt Kent's Deadside. I like the scary voodoo shit and death Deadside. I don't like the Harry Potter Deadside that Matt Kent introduced. That was ridiculous, in my opinion. It wasn't badly told. It's just not It's not what I want to see. And Shadow Man to me is voodoo, it's New Orleans, it's music, it's horror, and it's the dead side. And the dead side is scary as shit. And that's what Bloodshot did so good in Salvation. He was there to try to heal his daughter, and he had to go to the dead side. She's sick, and shit is happening. He doesn't even know where he's walking. He drops her. And sometimes he's in like this liquid, and he doesn't know like where to swim up or swim down. That's terrifying, man. It's like you're in fucking open water, and you don't know which way to go. You can't see up or down looks the same. Everything you crunch on, you don't know if it's bones, if it's something alive. Every creak that you hear, you don't know what's happening. You don't know what you're shooting at. You don't know what's going on. You don't know what if you're gonna get eaten by something. You hear monsters. You don't know. That's what made this book magical, is if you read it, and you put your eye. I mean, you can't close your eyes and read it because it's words, but if you picture yourself in that scene, that's how that book works. If you can do that, that book works. It works on so many levels, and people might say, "Where's my art?" You don't need the art if you get it, if you get what he was going for. Not a lot of people are gonna get it. I did, because one of my biggest fears is total cave darkness, or like cave exploration. Well, I was not fitting into something. I went cave exploration. I got my fat ass stuck in a corridor. I was scared. I was terrified. So there was that cave movie. I forget what it was, where those girls go exploring into these dark caves, and they end up in a corridor where they don't know how to get out. That was freaking terrifying. Not a lot of horror scares me. But when I saw voodoo scares me. Voodoo scares the shit out of me. When I saw Serpent in the Rainbow back in the day, and the guy's getting buried alive and shit like that, voodoo scares me. When I read Tales of the Zombie magazine, and you turn to the back and there's prose about voodoo and Haitian stuff and rituals and shit, that scares the crap out of me, man. I like to be scared because in movies and stuff, I don't get too scared anymore. When you deal with religion, I get scared. When you deal with entities, like one of the scariest movies I've ever seen was The Entity, and I watched that by myself, like on a. When I was still living at home, and it was like midnight on a Friday night, and I sat down and watched The Entity, and I was like, man, this is scary. And then I get to the end of it and said, this is based on a true story. This woman has being attacked, and there's no fucking explanation for how she gets bruised, how she gets attacked. This was at the end of the movie. I made it through the movie. I see this, and I'm like, this is based on a true story. I went and looked up stuff, and I'm like, holy fuck. That's fucking scary. Really scary. I think seances are pretty fucking scary. But I'm infatuated with Houdini and that seance shit that was one. You know, that stuff happened in the movies. He was always trying. He was a skeptic at heart. So he didn't believe in that shit. But just good stuff from Valiant, and that Bloodshot in the Dead Side worked for me so well. Like I just thought he did an amazing job. What other things I'm scared of? I'm scared of religion, and that's why religion scares the crap out of me. Possession, religion. Zombies don't scare me other than you're dead, especially if they're fast. You might as well just fucking give up. Unless they're a zombie that you have potential where they can burn out. When you have a horde that's slow, that's terrifying, but what's more terrifying is the people around you dealing with the situation, 'cause they'll fucking eat your ass or they'll kill you anyway. Vampires used to scare me. They don't when I was little. They don't anymore. Voodoo scares me. It scares me. I've read too many things about voodoo. And when Shadow Man started, it was in New Orleans, and there was jazz music. This new volume, there's not. He's not a jazz musician. I think he was a museum dude. I can't remember what he did before. But the guy before was a radio show host that did fucking. He was an assassin too before that, but Zero became a radio show host that was like a. People would call at midnight and say, "Hey, I got some shit going on," or "How do I fix my sink?" or "There's some voodoo shit." And then if it got involved voodoo, he would like go investigate it. And there was some scary ass shit happening in that Shadow Man volume. So Shadow Man, I've always loved, and it has to be in the horror genre for me, for it to work, in my opinion. The Dead Side needs to be scary. And they recently relaunched Shadow Man by Andy Diggle. And I was very pleasantly surprised. If you do not want to know about the details of this, I'm just going to say some things that I really liked about it. Well, in the mini series of Shadow Man, I think I'm going to actually go pull up the creative team for that mini series. It was like Paul Jenkins, I think. Shadow. I liked it a lot. It was volume 4. No, volume. Shadow Man End Times. It was Peter Milligan. I always get Paul Jenkins and Peter Milligan confused. I have no idea why, but I do in my mind. And Peter Milligan and Valentin L Delandro. I thought this was a great, great mini. The only thing is it was condensed. It was compacted. I think to get a really good effect, it should have been 6 issues. They should have built the relationship up, and they just made it like, okay, the relationship is there between Alyssa and Jack, and they kind of like move things around, and then he goes to the Shadow Realm, and then he's trapped by Dark, and then he's bitch. Then he's the Magpie. So this new series came right after Rapture, which was his last one. And Shadow Man does make an appearance in Ninjak versus the Valiant Universe too, which I found was interesting. People shit on that, but I think it's really entertaining. I think the pacing of it's very thematic for TV. I think it works. At least it works for me. It makes it interesting. I like the theme. It's like, he's being blackmailed because his best friend Neville is his kid and his wife are trapped or being they're kidnapped by why can't I think of her name? The girl with the hair. So I'm blanking out on her name. But anyway, he has to go steal the Book of Death for her, and then it involves Bloodshot, it involves the rest of the Valiant Universe, it involves Archer and Armstrong so far. It's involved Jack. So like I've enjoyed that. I understand what it is, but it still hits the notes of what the characters are not a characterization like they would be in Dead Drop, which I didn't like. That they're in character. Whether it's a story you really like, it's probably it's told very differently, but it's not told bad in my opinion. But anyway, the current Shadow Man series is the fifth series. It's by Andy Diggle and Stephen Segovia. Awesome artist, does a great interpretation of the voodoo stuff. At least I liked it a lot. But it opens up with Alyssa, and she's investigating something going on with the water making kids sick. So she hires this guy to take her into the swamp areas of Louisiana on a boat. so she can investigate what it is. And it turns out the guy that takes her out is really setting her up for some demon that's out there. And the thing I love about this is it's got like voodoo in it. It's got like cartomancy, map magic. It's got mentions of Gris-Gris. It mentions Punk Mambo, how he says she's not really a Mambo. She's more of a sorceress. She doesn't respect this stuff. It talks about Veve. It calls out to Papa Legba. And that's actually how Shadow Man returns, as she tries to call to Papa Legba for help. And Shadow Man, she brings Shadow Man back. The monster chases Alicia and Jack, but they imagine to get away. And then he wakes up like 3 days later because he's exhausted, and he's like, "Hey, baby, I'm wearing a towel. Let's get it on. I'm horny." And she's like, "Whoa, whoa, whoa, Romeo, back the fuck off, you know, back the fuck off." And he's pretty depressed. This version of Jack is kind of a he's kind of a weakling. Like he's a whiner and a I don't know what other words to say that aren't offensive, but he whines a lot. And what that's what I think this story is evolving too. It's like she's like, "You're a shadow man, you have responsibility, and I was brought up to help you. Like, we've always helped the shadow man. You're the sixth generation. I gotta help you. And I will help you. And I'm gonna call upon another demonic entity, Dambala, which is like a snake driven spirit." So she calls upon him, and that spirit is like, "Fuck you, Jack. You've never ha respected us. We don't respect you. All shit's gonna break loose." Alyssa passes out. She comes back as Baron Samedi. And this is where it gets really fucking interesting, because this guy is a real voodoo dude. I mean, if you go voodoo, you know, learn about him, he was a Haitian voodoo priest type thing. He's usually depicted with a top hat, black tail coat, dark glasses, cotton plugs, and nostrils after they resemble a corpse dressed and prepared in burial, the Haitian style. He has a white, frequently skull-like face, and speaks in a nasally voice. The former president of Life of Haiti, Francis Duvoir, modeled his cult after Baron Samedi. He is noted for disruption, obscenity, debauchery, and having particular fondness for tobacco and rum. Additionally, he's the Loa of Resurrection. That's going to be important. And in the later capacity, is often called upon for healing by those near or approaching death. Okay. Think about Shadow Man, and think about death, and think about where Jack ended up, and what his in VH1. Okay. He spends most of his time in an invisible realm of voodoo spirits. He's notorious for his outrageous behavior, swearing continuously, and making filthy jokes. And you'll see a lot of this stuff, I believe, in Garth Ennis's, because you know how Garth Ennis will let it go. He is married to another powerful spirit, Mammon Brigitte, but often chases after mortal women. He loves smoking and drinking, and is rarely seen with a cigar in his mouth or a glass of rum on his bony fingers. He's usually found at the crossroads between worlds, and he talks about that in this comic book. In the worlds of the living and the dead. When someone dies, he digs their grave and greets their soul after they've been buried, leading them to the underworld. Connection to other Loas, he's the leader of the, I don't know how to say this, but the Guardi Loa, with links to Matt. This is scary shit. Like, I'm getting scared about this shit. So he's like a master of the dead, but he's also a giver of life. He can cure any mortal of any disease or wound if he thinks it is worthwhile. His powers are especially great when it comes to voodoo curses and black magic. Isn't that fucking frightening? And if somebody is afflicted by a hex that brings them to the verge of death, they will not die if Varun refuses to dig their grave. So long as his mighty spirit keeps them out of the ground, they are safe. Just fascinating shit, but it has to do, too, with brainless zombies. And these are not the zombies like Walking Dead zombies. These are like voodoo-like fucking zombies. If you know Simon Garth and the Marvel magazine, now that's fucking some scary shit, because that guy was a fucking asshole right off the bat in the Black and White magazine. And Simon messed with the wrong voodoo. I don't remember if it was the voodoo priest or priestess, but cursed him to live and walk. And it was a lot. It had Steve Gerber shit in there, and you know how I feel about Steve Gerber. But anyway, I beat this thing to death. Why I liked it had a lot of, like I said, things about voodoo. It has a lot of horror. Baron Samedi came back as her, and he was like, if you listen to what I just read you, and then you think about what he's about, and how I told you that Jack is a wuss, okay? This is all coming together because Baron Samedi says, "Hey, motherfucker, I'm here to test you. I'm going to make your life hell. And I'm going to make you toughen up, Buttercup." I mean, he doesn't say it like that, but quit your whining. There's no crying in baseball. You toughen up, Buttercup. It's like coaches, man. When I was in high school and you were in baseball or basketball, my coaches would be arrested for abuse in today's society because they would hit and do things physically. But they taught you that, you know, laugh now, pretty boy, and I'll beat you to shit. I remember one of my friends laughing at something the coach said because he used to get in this voice and he'd say, "Laugh now, pretty boy, laugh now." And he laughed at something he said, and he just punched the shit out of him. God damn. But and he used to use the word bird. Hey, bird! You know, we'd be doing suicides we'd have crazy drills. So basketball was crazy. We'd have these drills where we'd do suicide, you know, run suicides. You go up the line, back, you know, different parts of the court. You just keep running. But one of the last things he would do is he'd roll the basketball and he says, "Die for it! Die for it, damn it!" And you would dive and you'd give yourself a strawberry on your knee, and he's like, yeah, that's what would make him happy, is if he heard your skin burn against the floor, the basketball floor. And he said, "See, pain in you, pain in you makes you stronger, pain." It was a crazy time, man, but we loved each other. We were like a band of brothers. We would have the thing where he'd call out your name. We'd be running around the gym, and practice was like 4 hours. And I swear to God, I could eat 4 pizzas by myself and I would lose weight, because basketball would wear me the fuck out. Like, I couldn't keep pounds. I couldn't keep carbs in me because it would just burn off. But there was one time we had guys, we'd always stick up for each other because he'd yell our names and you'd have to run to the front. So we'd like run around the gym, and it's like half hour. And if that guy didn't run to the gym, you'd run longer. Like if he wasn't able to pull to the front, so he'd call your name, you'd have to run to the front of the line. And then if you couldn't, you'd run for another 15 minutes and he'd just keep on adding more time. So, we would like purposely like slow down. We'd use like strategy. But there was one time I remember distinctively is I blacked out. And back in that time it was varsity and JV and C team. Freshmen kind of did their own thing, but you know, when I was in JV, I remember we were running and I blacked. You know how you can sometimes feel like you're going to throw up and you start seeing the spots in front of your eyes. You're like, and then it eventually goes to solid black. And I told one of my best friends, which It's funny because we played basketball a lot, but he was my Sergeant Rock friend too. We grew up reading Sergeant Rock comics. But I like said, Eloy, I said, I'm gonna fucking pass out, man. And my brothers held me up, I swear to God, and I ran for another half hour and was able to do it because they held me up. It was like we had each other's backs. And man, those were good times. They were painful, but they were good times because, man, we were just like so bonded. And then there was the stairs. You'd run the bleachers. Oh my God. And if you missed a bleacher, you'd almost break an ankle, I swear. Then we had this drill where, you know how you learn a defensive position and then you like tap your feet, you like tap, you like slap you're in this like a linebacker, like when they're in a defensive position. Well, in basketball, you're in it too, and you're pounding your feet one after the other. And what you would do is you'd go across from another player. He'd like say, "You pair up with so and so," and you would try to slap. It's kind of like a way to steal the basketball. At least that's the intent of it. But you try to slap the inside of the knee of your other player. And oh my God, man! Sometimes our knees were like almost literally bleeding. But it was crazy shit, man, I swear. But we were tough little we were in the valley, not the rich part of town, and we were smaller than almost any basketball team there ever was. I mean, when I was a freshman, I was one of the taller people, and then everybody sprouted, but like our tallest, we had two really tall people that were over 6 feet, but they were awkward as hell, man. They could get rebounds, but they just didn't have the shit. But the best players were like from 5'2" to 5'7" or 5'8". So, when we held our own, man, and we held our own through defense. I can't believe that this is a comic podcast and I'm talking about basketball. But I don't even know how I got here. But that's the way shit goes down. So anyway, Jack Boniface goes after Alyssa, and I mean, it's Papa, what do you call it, Baron Samedi. He sees him her body as that, but as soon as he grabs her and starts choking her, she switches back to Alyssa. So you're like, oh fuck. But good shit. I'm gonna talk for a few more minutes about some questions. I think I might have a few. I'll go to the Twitters. Glenn Clark asks, what book is on the top of your want list for Heroes Con? I don't know anymore. I was targeting Amazing Spider-Man First Punisher. So 128, 129, I can't remember. But things may have changed. So, it's pretty much whatever strikes my fancy at the moment. But I will get a high-end book. At least one of them. I don't really know. There's been a couple of action comics that are first appearances of the Legion of Superheroes. Like the one that I want, I think, is the first appearance of Brainiac 5, Triplicate Girl, and Bouncing Boy, or maybe one other. It has Supergirl on the cover with a bunch of little Supermen. I tried to win it on auction on Comic Leak, didn't get it, but I would love to have that book. That's one that I will seek out. I think at least try to seek out. If I seek out anything else, it would probably be like a first appearance of something. I still One gem that I could never find, and I've tried my damnedest, is the first Detective Chimp. And that's in. I'll look it up right now because I don't even remember what it is. Adventures of. I know what book title it is. It's Adventures of Rex the Wonder Dog. And I can't remember the issue. And it doesn't even say, it doesn't tell you it. I think I was looking at Overstreet, and it may be in the book, but I was looking at one of those big old spiral ones that's good for reading. These fucking spiral bound ones are huge. And I hate it because spirals, the pages could sometimes come out. It drives me nuts, but. I couldn't find one at the comic shop, and the guy said, "Look at this," because he had a Rex the Wonder Dog, but it was number 9, and I didn't remember which issue it is. But the first appearance of Detective Chimp is Re The Adventures of Rex the Wonder Dog, number 4. And according to this database, it says it's like worth 200 to 300 near mint, but I've never been able to find this fucker. I can find a bunch of Rex the Wonder Dogs around it, but I haven't been able to find the first Detective Chimp. That was one that I'd really like to have. And there's a few All-Star Westerns, I believe. I would love to have the first Jonah Hex, because I have a full run of Jonah Hex, like all the volumes. But when you get into Adventures, All-Star Western, Western, they had the New 52 one, which is really good. All-Star Western, number 10 is the first appearance of Jonah Hex. I would get that. I'm missing it. And let's see, what else am I missing? Jonah Hex is also in 11, so I wouldn't mind getting 10 and 11. And there might be a few Jonah Hexes I'm missing, but I thought I got really freaking close to volume 1. And Jonah Hex ran for a while, from 1977 to 1985. Yeah, I have the full run. Oh no, I don't. I'm missing number 89. Son of a bitch. And that's from 1985. I gotta fix that. Fuck. I should have that. Fuck! I'm missing one. God dang it. But then you get to the second series. I have all that. That's from 2006 to present. There's All-Star Western Volume 2, which was New 52, which was after this long-running Justin Gray, Jimmy Palmiotti run. Bunch of one-shots. Really good stories. So those might be a target. I don't know. Whatever strikes my fancy at the time. And then if I ever run across a Police Comics, which has Plastic Man and it's affordable and it's a VG or higher and it's affordable, I'll grab that shit. Same thing with National Comics, Crack Comics, Smash Comics, any of the quality comics. I would love to, like, I know Rob, my co-host, Retro, he just recently got a Quality Comics GI Combat. A lot of things came from Quality Comics. GI Combat, Black Hawk, all the Freedom Fighter stuff, Plastic Man, all kinds of great characters. I love DC's acquisition history. And they use them as opposed to what Marvel does. Check my phone and see. I got a text message. Okay, so she'll be home, so I'm gonna wrap this up pretty quick. So what do I what else do that was a question on Twitter. I might have to save some of these questions. Drew from Comics for Fun and Profit says, Glad FF is returning. Any thoughts on Slot Bocelli creative team? I'm very happy that FF is returning. I'm very curious to see what Slot and Bocelli, like Slot's done Amazing Spider-Man for a long, 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 long time, and for the most part, I think he's been really, really good. I didn't care for his Silver Surfer, but I'm not a Doctor Who fan. So, we'll see what happens there. And I think I'll save some of, let's see what the, maybe I can go through them really quick. My wife says, she must have been on the Twitch, she says, when is enough enough? And Luke Foster said, it's never enough. It's never enough until your heart stops beating. And that's a New Order song. So that's my answer. I just took Luke Foster's It's Never Enough and then I put my New Order flavor to it. Luke asks, what did you think of Metal? I'm not done yet, but I haven't been in the mood to finish it. Plus, I knew it wasn't going to finish until this week. So I've been holding off on it. I got plenty of other shit to read. Shane says, how do you, I convince my wife I need more room for comics and action figures? That you can never do. Like, I can't advise you on that. The only thing I could say is love will prevail if love is there. If she understands you, my wife knew what she was getting into in high school. Like, she came into my room. My room was covered with posters of superheroes. There were boxes stacked everywhere, comics everywhere. My ceiling had, it, you couldn't even see ceiling. It had posters of superheroes all over. I had, I forget what they call them, but back then in the, eight, I think it was the late 80s or early 90s, they would sell these cloth-like posters. And they would hang on a doyle, like it would have a doyle at the top and it would wrap around the doyle, and then it would have a string from that, and then you could hang it from the string. And I had about like, I don't know, I had about 15 of those. They were all Marvel and they were all like Marvel covers, but I had a ton of those. And then I had stickers all over my door, like you see some of those retro stickers, you know, and they have like a funny remark. Some of them aren't funny, like they have the thing it's clobbering time or but sometimes there's a funny remark like Valkyrie will be saying something ridiculous and Nighthawk will say something. I had them plastered all over my door. I had a lot of Batman 89 stuff. So she knew my obsession and I feel for her because she sees all this shit, and I know it gives her anxiety, but she loves me enough to know that it makes me happy. Even when I've tried to downsize and stuff, she's like, "Mike, you're not yourself. You're not as happy." She knows this stuff makes me ecstatic. And then Tim Terrell says, "Are you liking Doomsday Clock?" I read 1, 2, and 3, and then I stopped. I made a pause for the cause, and I love it. It's been a 5 out of 5 for me, but I'm a huge Watchmen fan, and I like what they're doing with like the Punch and Jewel characters of the Watchmen universe. He said he never heard from me about Wonder Woman 77. Wonder Woman 77 Batman was really, really good. Wonder Woman 77 from Dynamite. I'm trying to think of. No, that was. The Wonder Woman 77 Bionic Woman crossover is sort of mediocre. Like it's cool because the guy knows a lot about it, but the guy, matter of fact, he's the head of the Wonder Woman fan club that's writing it for Dynamite, but he knows a lot about those TV shows. But the way he writes isn't really clicking with me. But he's really good at what he does, and he has all the characters in it. It's really good. The Wonder Woman 77, Batman 66. Now that is really good, really good. That's actually my favorite of the Batman 66 books is when they team up with Wonder Woman 77. And he says, "Did you like Wonder Woman's?" What do you say? I know you liked Batman 66. Did you like Wonder Woman 77? I did. The Bionic Woman crossover, not as good, but the Wonder Woman 77, really good. Are you keeping up with the latest DC animated movies? I'm keeping up with them with procurement. I buy every superhero movie, even the ones I don't like Ragnarok, Thor. But I'm compulsive to do that, and I do get them all. So I have all the animated series, even the anime one, the Batman, and I did watch that one, but I don't watch them all. And it's just because of time. What ends up happening is my DVR is filling up with all the DC stuff and all Lucifer, everything else. Good Doctor. Excellent finale, by the way. Good Doctor, fantastic. And I can't keep up without having to fill the DVR. Now that I got Krypton and all this other stuff, I haven't even gotten to the Netflix because I'm basically trying to keep my DVR from overfilling. So I hope that answers your question. Haven't really watched an animated one in a while. I have them. The last one I watched was The Killing Joke, and there was a lot of them before that that I didn't get to. So I want to thank you for your questions. I've already gone almost an hour, and I'm going to come back with the weekly reads. And thank you for supporting this podcast, and I'll be right back. I have one more question, and it came in last minute, but it's from my friend Martin Ferretti, who's part of the Nerdy Legion and a bunch of other podcasts. I'd encourage you to check them out, especially the Comic Talk one. That one, you could even stop listening to this. Go listen to Comic Talk. Go listen to that. And if you like it more, go listen to that. It's that good. And plus, if you know me, I'm never worried about losing listeners. I don't even know how many there are. I don't know what my numbers are. I think the last time I asked Derek it was in 2 years ago. I was just curious. I said, "What is the DC Noise number?" And he sent me for a particular episode. But I have no idea. It might be two. Well, I know it's more than two, but it might be 10, or it might be 2,000. I have no idea how many listeners I have. I don't even have a clue. All I do is post the shows. I have no insight into the metrics. And I'm lazy too. I don't even put it out like Geek Brunch. I should have gotten it out on, some kind of streaming service like whatever that one's called. But I haven't yet, so it goes to show. This is like a diary. I do my podcasts because I like them. I don't really do them. If you have listeners, that's a positive. But if you don't, and you like streaming your thoughts, it's a good way to calm yourself down, especially get ready for the weekend. But Martin's podcast is really good. He tackles a lot of stuff. He talks about upcoming books. He talks about current things that are going on, like the last one that I heard. I think I'm an episode behind. He talked about his experience at the South Carolina Comic Con and how vendors are. There are some good vendors and there's some bad vendors, and he kind of goes through that. That's a good, interesting topic in itself, especially on a Sunday, because on a Sunday everybody's already thrashed, but it's a good topic, so go check out Comic Talk. And you can find it on the Nerdy Legion podcast network. So go check that out. Stop this one. Go check it out. See what you think. If I like it, you'll probably like it. If you like this podcast, I think you'll like that podcast because he's really good at talking to himself too. But he has one more question, and I'm gonna try to get to it really quick. He says, when archiving renumbered books like Detective, do it chronologically, numerically,
or do you have three separate tabs for them? I do it chronologically. It just makes sense because I'm a history guy. So, like, I want my books in the order that they came out. So, like, detective and stuff is easier because they don't bounce around as much. Like, there's only been one interruption with 52, and then it picked up with Rebirth. So that's not a good example of that. But, like, Amazing Spider-Man, Avengers, it's jumped around twice already where they went to renumbering around the 500s and then around the 600s, and they keep doing that over and over again. But I'll always record it with the latest volume. So, like, this current Avengers storyline, Never Surrender, I don't go file it with Volume 1, even though you'll find it in the Overstreet Guide as Volume 1, probably, with 600. I'll file it under whatever Avengers volume is. If it's Volume 6 of Avengers, then it'll be Volume 6 that I file it with, because it's when the story continued. Like, it had right before that, and then it went in with the Champions arc, and then it went into with the Champions crossover is where the numbering restarted, I believe, because that's where I started, and then there was a story before that. So I just file it with the current volume and just keep it going, and then they renumber, like, the new Avengers is coming out, number one, in 2 months. I will start another volume tab. That'll be Volume 8 or whatever the hell volume it is. So that's what I do chronological. And then if the number increases, I don't go put them back with Volume 1. Even though my database will do that. My database will take those renumberings and it'll put it with Volume 1 as it's part of the renumbering. And then the next question, so that's a good question. There's no really right or wrong answer. It's whatever makes you happy. And then he asked, what is the current book you wish more people were reading? I wish they were reading Titan Comics Hard Case Crime. That's just my favorite shit right now. Like, I don't want that ever going away. And they went 2 months without publishing one, and it gives me the itches. So I hope that answers your question, and I will talk to you soon with the Weekly Reads. Thank you, Martin. Appreciate the questions, everybody.
Hello and welcome back to Mike M's Weekly Reads, and this time we're going to break down the books. So this week is ironic because it is for May 8th, 2017 through May 14th, 2017. And what's ironic about this is I just got done talking about a lot of Valiant. And this week I was on a Valiant tear in May, so it's just a weird coincidence. So let's do our totals again. 5, I love it. 4, I really like it. 3, I like it. 2, I did not like it. And 1, I hated it. The totals for this week were 27 comics. And I didn't total them, but I'm going to total them now. There were 19 Valiant, 3 Marvel, 5 DC. And we'll start at the bottom and work our way to the top. So the 3 out of 5s, I liked it. We have Justice League of America, number 5. The Justice League goes after Aegis, who is supplying different weapons to people. Lobo defeated by a weapon that won't let him heal fast enough. That was kind of interesting. And it was a new group, Aegis, which, if I remember correctly, that name belonged to somebody that got bit by the alien in Bloodlines. So I don't know if they were just reusing that name. Then we have a 3 out of 5, Ghost Rider, number 48 and 49. This is Dread breaks out of prison with the help of Rack. Hellgate wants vengeance. Vengeance teams up with the Hulk and Spider-Man. And it's a Mackie and Garney issue. So I was getting close to issue 50. This was me trying to complete the Danny Ketch run of Ghost Rider. The last 3 out of 5. This is a Ninjak 22. And why was this one lower than the others that are above it? Well, it was a silent issue. And it was just art. It was a silent issue as Ninjak goes after Roku, as she is where Dead Monk is, and revive Master Dark from the tree. So remember, he was stuck in, he turned into a tree at the end of Book of Death. So now let's get into the 4 out of 5s. We had Batwoman number 2. Batwoman tries to save her friend Saifa, I don't even know how to pronounce that, and find out who's destroying this island. We have Wildstorm number 3. This is Jenny Sparks was introduced, and the Wildcats go to get the engineer, but are attacked by Io. So remember, there's a bunch of conspiracy between organizations, Io, the Weathermen, and Wildcats, which is what is that organization? I keep forgetting. Halo, I think it is. It's something like that. We have Avengers Unplugged number 3. This was the 99-cent tryout that they did for Marvel with Fantastic Four Unplugged. There was a Spider-Man, the Untold Tales of Spider-Man, which was Kurt Busiek. I think that was the most successful. The others didn't last but like 6 issues. Try to lower the price to 99 cents and nobody bought it. Went back to paper, you know, so that experiment dried up. So you can't say the cost of comics will sell well if you lower the price. You can't do it. That's why you have like the $3.99 books in the top 10 all the time. Very seldom do you see the $2.99 with the exception of like Batman. That's just because it's twice a month. If it went to once a month, it would be $3.99. But anyway, this is Black Widow and Crystal go to a strip club. There you go. There is a Quicksilver stripper. Super Adaptoid as Thing destroys a building. They fight Super Adaptoid and defeat him with electrical overload. Johnny does not know Lija is dating him as another woman. And that's Johnny Storm. And if you remember, Lija is the Skrull. But the robotics secretary knows. An Absorbing Man goes to steal an engagement ring because he wants to give it to Titana. Then we have Immortal Brothers in a Valiant book, The Tale of the Green Knight. This is Archer telling Faith a story of King Arthur when she is sick. It involves all of the brothers as they have to defeat the Green Knight. We have Generation Zero number 9. I think I'm the only guy that liked Generation Zero. I don't know too many people that enjoyed it, but I did. This is the finale, the battle with Adeline and her father. Keisha and Gen Zero make a safe haven for kids in the tower. And then we all know what happens to Gen Zero in the future. Wonder Woman 20 and 21. This is more backstory in the past with Veronica Kale. She defeats Phoebos and Deimos. They're the two brothers that were, they actually became her dogs, Veronica Kale's dogs. Dot still with no face. Cheetah fights Wonder Woman for Kale. Wonder Woman defeats Dr. Poison. Another Dr. Poison issue. I just read one recently. Wonder Woman helps Kale find her daughter, Izzy. And she has no face, if I remember correctly. Then we have another 4 out of 5. Ninjak 18 through 21. I went on a Ninjak terror. This was Fist and Steel, Ninjak dying in the present from Deadside virus. Takes place in the future as Galad asks for his help to find Fakar, and they find out that Dr. Silk is trying to access the Well of Knowledge as the Deadside intelligence mechanism. A fight in Deadside, Ninjak finds punch cards where he sees Roku die, and they find the cure for the Deadside virus. That was 18 through 21. The last 4 out of 5 is Adventures of Armstrong, Archer and Armstrong, number 9 through 12. This is they go up and meet with Andromeda, who is old. She moves Glubglig into Archer, and he is captured by the 1% as viruses are leaked throughout Florida to make the residents go nuts. And if Glubglub is the little mutated Armstrong, if you remember, he's like about 2 feet tall, and they were cloning Armstrong. Then we get into the 5 out of 5s, and we start with Ninjak 23 through 26. That's Raku breaks in a maximum security prison to free the Shadow 7. Ninjak teams with Sandra Dark to take down Dark with the Shadow 7. Raku betrays the team to Dark to get a nail out of her neck that is keeping her alive, defeat Dark, and Ninjak puts the nail back into her neck to bring her back to life. It's like she wanted to die. Got Ninjak 14 through 17. This is another 5 out of 5. Siege of King's Castle. Colin King's Castle is destroyed. His safe houses are destroyed. The weapons and money are stolen. MI6 is after him. Kind of like in Ninjak vs. the Valiant Universe. Neville betrays him. Livewire tries to help. Very similar storylines with Ninjak versus Val, now that I read it. Finds out it is Raku and it is Love Angela. Finds out the servant was his father. That was the man they introduced in Ninjak. I think it was number one or somewhere in there when they had all the flashbacks with him as a boy. And then Raku frees Master Dark. And I just spelled Master Dark wrong. Gonna have to fix that. Darque. All right, and that was the last 5 out of 5. So the top of the pile was Ninjak 23 through 26 and Ninjak 14 through 17. And that should wrap up this episode. Thank you for listening. You can reach me or send questions on Twitter to @MikeMyersBrunch. They will all appear in future episodes as I'll stockpile them. So you could send them at any time. You could always send it to feedback to Mike@comicbooknoise.com. If you get a chance, leave an iTunes review. I haven't gotten one since 2016. That's a long fucking time ago, man. So if you want to leave an iTunes review, go to Geek Brunch, because that's what this is under, and leave an iTunes review for Mike Gam's Weekly Reads, or Geek Brunch Retro, or Geek Brunch. I would be most appreciative of that. What else? You can go to the Facebook page at Geek Brunch Podcast. Click the like button. Follow all the episode threads there. And the website is geekbrunchpodcast.com. And I think that about wraps this up. I want to thank you all for listening. Thank you all for the questions. And we will talk to you in a few. Bye-bye.